The latest in Cleveland with the quarterback battle, what's happening, plus a quarterback we've absolutely forgotten about, and a quarterback that's going to start week one you should be thinking about. Oh, and a raging Giants debate? Yeah, it is a testy Tuesday. We're bringing all the heat on Inside Coverage right now. Welcome to Inside Coverage. You know the deal. It's the how and why behind everything going on in the NFL. And it's the offseason, but there's no such thing as the offseason. We got a lot to get to. Jory Epstein, Frank Schwab, I'm Jason Fitz. Jory and I are on the East Coast melting. And so, like, for the world that was complaining a month ago that there was not going to be any summer, we are in seventh layer of hell here, but we are going to glisten our way through it. Frank, you don't have to deal with this East Coast heat wave, which is why you're jovial as always, dude. Like, you're just, Frank looks happy starting the show because he's not melting at 1,000 degrees.
It was like 100 degrees in Colorado last week. Oh. So, you know, it does get that way out here. At least there's no more snow here. That's all I'm happy for.
Yeah, that is fair. We all live in places where it's like, if it's the one time a year we don't get snow, then we're happy. Jory, are we feeling good? Like, we got a lot of quarterbacks to get to. So, you know, are you feeling ready for the offseason of quarterback talk? Because I feel like it's just, you got to amp yourself up. You got to get right for it. You got to get good with God. You got to get ready for this.
I'm ready. I feel like we've got some old guys we want to talk about, some new guys we want to talk about. We're going to redefine what it means to be a rookie on today's episode. So I'm excited. I know our listeners love quarterbacks. We love quarterbacks. Sometimes I show up to teams and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm here to ask about your quarterback. Cleveland was like, we didn't even ask you why you were coming here because we know why you're coming here. But it's an important position and there's a lot going on and a lot of unsettled quarterback battles around the league. And so I think we really want to dive into those. So by the time we get to training camp, us and our listeners can really hit the ground running, understanding what these battles are going to look like.
I think that's so. Let's just rip the bandaid off, go right to a quarterback check-in post minicamp and have a little bit of a nuanced conversation. The three of us, I want to peel behind the curtain because one thing that we get the grace from our bosses to do is to be honest with people, right? So I feel like the last time we said anything about Shadur and it got clipped off, it got a little contentious. I got contentious with some Browns fans. Frank and I got contentious on behalf of, like, Browns fans are angry about this. And I, like, we're going to talk about Shadur, obviously. But I just think there has to be some caveat here of the why and the how. Like, that's what this show's about, right? Like, part of the reason we talk about Shadur is because it is what is the most interesting to the broadest set of Browns followers, to fans, to people across the league. Like, if you go to some random person in Montana that barely follows the NFL, they may not know what the stories are for the Jags, but they sure as hell know, if they're an NFL fan, that Shadur is trying to become the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Like, there is some level of importance to this conversation because it does mean something given the way he was hyped up, given the way there were expectations in the draft, given what happened in the draft. Like, Jory, these are all bricks in the Shadur wall. And I just feel like sometimes we got to kind of remind people why that wall exists and why we talk about it so much.
Yeah, my mentions were wild after the last episode of the show that I was on. I mean, Fitz, literally, thank you. You were like, sorry about everything everyone's saying. I know you don't care, but it was my first, like, true exposure to what the Browns fan base could be. So for all of you listening, thanks for tuning in. But I definitely think that people have taken these other, like, societal debates and different people have basically taken other things that they're concerned about in society and trying to, like, superimpose it onto the Shadur Sanders debate. And based off what you think about something else, you're either extremely pro-Shadur or extremely anti-Shadur, despite the fact that the man has not even played in a preseason game yet and not taken a first-team rep in practice. You would think, based off my mentions, that I, Jory Epstein, was the one denying Shadur Sanders all of these first-team reps in practice that every other quarterback was getting. So there were some wild things. But to me, really, when I got down to my whole Shadur's fourth on the depth chart right now, and I'm not saying he's always going to be fourth on the depth chart, there were multiple reasons, including the fact that I flew to Cleveland and watched where everyone else got first-team reps, and that was for a reason. I also think that when I talk to people, and I talk to general manager Andrew Berry, head coach Kevin Stefanski, offensive coordinator Tommy Rees, all four quarterbacks talked in the 2 days that I was there, and what the decision-makers continued to tell me about what they wanted out of their quarterback is, and I'll quote Tommy Rees on this, decision-making and processing. And Andrew Berry told me the team wants someone who is an efficient operator and will make good decisions with the football. Those are the number one things they're looking for in a week one starter. So I'm not saying Shador will never play, and I'm not saying that Dylan Gabriel won't start later in the season. I would not be surprised if we saw him at some point, because if you're the Cleveland Browns, you have to not only understand what you have in 2025, but also do you want to package your multiple first-round picks in 2026 to move up and get the quarterback you want, or do you have that guy on the roster? But I think when you look at this, if decision-making and processing are something that they're putting at a premium, well, Joe Flacco's been in the league forever, and Kenny Pickett's also had a decent amount of experience. And as much as everyone wanted to go crazy in my mentions about Shador Sanders' number of offensive coordinators at the two schools he was at, you're still not going to convince me that that is more exposure than what Dylan Gabriel had with 6 years at three different schools. So, like, there is a different level of reps. And I think we saw this in San Francisco when Brock Purdy came in and Trey Lance was there. And I understand that Trey Lance had an injury, but I think the number one thing that definitely made a difference for them is Trey Lance had a pretty crazy low number of reps at the college and high school levels at quarterback. And Brock Purdy started for 4 years at Iowa State. So even if he didn't have that same playmaking high level ceiling, the floor was just so much higher because the mental bank of reps to draw upon was much deeper. And I think that's what we're seeing in the Cleveland Browns quarterback contest.
Absolutely. I mean, if you suggest that Shador Sanders isn't going to be the locked-in starter by week one and probably for the next decade, a lot of these Shador backers just lose their minds. Like, they, how dare you? How dare you not say that he's going to beat out Dylan Gabriel, who was drafted two rounds ahead of him, or the two veterans they brought in, and he's going to just vault from fourth to first on the depth chart? Like, that happens at every single training camp. It's a very weird phenomenon. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't ready for it. It reminds me in some ways, a completely different example, but in some ways very similar, of Tim Tebow, where people just lose their minds about Tim Tebow. There's no rational conversation about Tim Tebow. Like, it was, and it's the same way with Shador. Like, there's posts go, they go up on social media of him throwing a pass that literally any NFL quarterback can throw. And the caption will just be like, how could the NFL possibly have let this guy slip to the fifth round? He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, what are we doing here? But yes, Shador is an oddball case of a fifth round pick who is the most talked about rookie in the NFL right now. I was just on talking with your people, Fitz, in Nashville at radio, just talking about how Cam Ward has just been completely overshadowed because of Shador Sanders, a fifth round pick. It's unlike anything else. But yes, I mean, if we're taking a step back and looking at this logically, people say, oh, draft position doesn't matter once the draft is over. It does matter. It absolutely matters. The Cleveland Browns told us 2 months ago that we like Dylan Gabriel a lot more than we like Shador Sanders. That's why they drafted him two rounds ahead of him. So Shador has a long way to go before he's relevant in this quarterback competition. It could happen, but he probably needs some injuries and some other breaks in front of him to realistically have a shot, like Dak Prescott did a few years ago when he was a rookie. But it won't stop the conversation. Every single pass Shador Sanders makes in the preseason is going to be dissected, talked about by us, talked about by fans, all over social media. If he has one good game in the preseason in the fourth quarter against a bunch of guys who are going to be selling insurance in September, it's going to be proof that he's going to Canton, right? They're just going to waive the five-year waiting period for him. Again, this is unlike anything I've seen other than Tim Tebow. That's the only thing I can compare it to.
I definitely think you're right, and the Dak comparison is great, and I use that a lot when talking to people during my trip to the Browns, because when Dak was a rookie, fourth-round pick, so Shador's a fifth-round pick, Dak was drafted slightly above him, he was the fourth-string quarterback. But then Kellen Moore broke his ankle, and he was the number two quarterback at the time. Tony Romo got hurt in the preseason game and had the fracture to his spine. And then you had Jameel Showers, who became a safety rather than a quarterback. But the reason I think it's so relevant is not just the injuries. It's the reminder that if you're Shador Sanders, not only do you need to absolutely light it up, both in terms of your mastery of the playbook and in terms of your playmaking on the field, which is challenging, you also have to have things outside of your control go really, really well. And so when you're the Browns, that's kind of what they're harping on, which is that you don't control this quarterback competition. You control what you're able to do, which, again, I would say that of the possible things Shador could do to win this job, I don't think he has gotten top marks on all of them. That's not necessarily luck. It's going to take time to learn. It's okay. That is very normal for rookies. But on top of that, even if he was crushing it, you would still have all of this experience of, hey, Kevin Stefanski is really comfortable with Joe Flacco because of what they've done together before.
And by the way, it's not just the normal for any rookie. It's more than normal for a fifth round pick. We should not expect any fifth round pick to just walk into the starting lineup. That doesn't happen very often, but people think it does. And don't you think, Jory, don't you think that for either rookie, let's bring Dylan Gabriel into it, talk about overshadowed. The Browns aren't going to want to expose either of those guys early in the season because their early season schedule is so difficult. Why would you want to start Dylan Gabriel in week one and have him go 0-6. What's the point in that? Don't you think the early season schedule matters to these coaches where they kind of know, like, look, this is not an easy landing spot for a rookie quarterback. Let's let Kenny Pickett take some lumps or Joe Flacco take some lumps.
I will say quickly here, to that end, with the Dylan Gabriel portion of this conversation, one thing that gets stuck in my head is when I talked to Max Crosby after he signed his first massive deal and we were getting a tattoo together. And I asked Max how it felt like knowing that he was generationally wealthy in that moment. And his first response was, nothing changed in my life. I still went to the gym this morning at 4:30 a.m. But he said also, they never forget the number next to your name. They never forget where you were drafted. And one of the points that he made to me in that conversation was that the fact is, not only did he have to win his job, he had to beat out everybody that didn't think he should have been drafted, that didn't think that thought that there were better players ahead of him. Like, if you think about it organizationally from the Browns, they should want their third round draft pick to beat out their fifth round draft pick at quarterback. Like, ultimately, they just want to get a quarterback. But if you're just talking about the way everything's going to lay out within the room, there is some part of this conversation that you'd have to have as a coaching staff, as scouts, as a GM, as front office, as overall, you'd have to say, hey, there's a reason we took Dylan Gabriel two rounds before we took Shador. Like, if they're looking at their own system honestly, but based on just the way they drafted, the Browns should want Dylan Gabriel to go out and clearly win this job, which means Shador's going to have to not only play lights out for him, he's going to have to play better than Dylan Gabriel through every ounce of this to justify the change in that simply because of where he was drafted.
I definitely think that's the case. And I think when you look at this also, to me, this is not a four-way quarterback competition. This is a two-way two-part quarterback competition. Is Kenny Pickett or Joe Flacco going to start week one? To me, unless Dylan Gabriel just absolutely goes off, I think that one of the veterans will be starting week one. I don't know if the other will be on the roster. Andrew Berry told me on the record that absolutely, absolutely they could keep four. I still have questions about that. And then I think the second question is which of the rookies is going to get the chance to show what they could do later in the season, Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders. Dylan Gabriel currently, both from a draft standpoint and from a performance and mastery playbook standpoint, has the edge on that. So to me, there's this it's a two-part, two-quarterback competition. This is not a four-quarterback competition in terms of who's starting week one. As you said, that schedule's insane. They start off with the Bengals, the Ravens, the Packers, the Lions, the Vikings, and the Steelers in the first 6 weeks. Then you get the Dolphins in week seven, followed by the Patriots in the bye week. That is where I would expect that, unless they feel like they're really contending, we have the chance for a switch. And I think that we see this happen all the time with the New England Patriots and Drake May last year. Everyone kind of knew when that soft spot was that they felt like they could acclimate Drake May. Now, I was actually surprised they started Drake May for the first time against the Houston Texans. I went to New England for that game, and I really thought they were going to wait another week, but they wanted to start him at home and whatever. I mean, to his credit, he held up well despite the score not reflecting what you would want for your first start. Like, he as a quarterback was not the primary problem, in my opinion. But I think there's definitely that element. I also think that if you're Shador Sanders, off the field, you've got to button it up a little bit. He was cited twice this month in June for speeding. And while one of the times he was driving 91 in a 65 and then 101 also. So 41 miles over the 60 mile per hour speed limit. I don't think the Browns are going to cut him or not start him because he's speeding. But I think that if you are already last in the quarterback competition and then you start having these violations going 40 plus miles over the speed limit, it's definitely not going to help your case in terms of them believing that they can trust you for the job. And I also think, I mean, I'm very grateful that nothing bad happened, but we have seen, unfortunately, I mean, fits with your team in Vegas, and we've seen this with Rashee Rice as well, that there have been some very serious injuries and accidents that have happened because of whether it's speeding or racing or all of these different things that happen when these guys speed Obviously, it happens when non-players speed as well, but we've seen it specifically in the NFL. So I think that that's something that Shadur should definitely really consider.
Can I be honest, too? Like, the 101 in a 65 is jarring, right? But it was even more jarring for
in
me, guys.
In a 60.
Or in a 60. And 101 in a 60. But it was even more jarring for me to find out that that was his second massive speeding ticket. Like, because I think a lot of us who look down, you're like, oh, yeah, I got a little lead in my foot. Like, I'm driving like an idiot. Okay, that happens. But when it's like, oh, by the way, this isn't the only time that he was in that range. Like, because if you're driving 90 or if you're driving 100, you're kind of, Frank, you're in the same range to me. Like, I do think there's a little bit of like, wow, the first time didn't slow him down. So now we got two tickets in a month. Like, that's just, that's attention you don't need.
Yeah, it's just, don't do it. Like, it's not the biggest deal in the world, I don't think. And I don't think the Browns think it's that big of a deal. But, you don't want this adding up and all of a sudden, and to be fair, Shadur has really never been in trouble off the field. Like, that's not part of what he is. He's always been a pretty good citizen, right? Like, there's never any news that he's really a troublemaker that way. So I don't think it's a big deal. But yes, it just... Don't do it. Don't be dumb. Don't be driving 101 miles an hour. It's very easily avoidable. And I think, he's a young guy. He probably, hopefully, learned his lesson after, like you said, the second time getting pulled over doing excessive speeding. So, but yeah, it doesn't help your case at all. It's not what the Browns want to be dealing with. I'm sure Kevin Stefanski is like, what are we talking about here, Shadur? What are you doing? Come on. Like, this is, you just don't want that, especially from a rookie who is supposed to be seen and not heard.
All right, so let's take a look at some of the other quarterbacks, because I think we can all agree that the Shadur Dillon, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, this is the beginning of Shadur versus Dillon, and it's going to last months, and we're no closer to any sort of an answer right now than we
were. And people are going to be blown away when Dillon Gabriel gets the first start over Shadur Sanders. They are going to be on the floor like, can't believe this is happening, because Shadur Sanders walks on water to them. Like, that's, the fan base is nuts. The fan base is crazy right now over Shadur Sanders. When Dillon Gabriel was drafted two rounds ahead of him for a reason. Like, that just happens. So,
right, and in whatever. Addition to the, like, computer-like processing that Dillon Gabriel has shown the Browns and has really impressed them with, I think that when you think about the biggest knock on Dillon Gabriel being his height and the question of, hey, is he going to be able to see over the offensive lineman? Is his height going to be an impediment? Kevin Stefanski's offense actually is really well-suited to that, because the timing it requires and the level of anticipation, you're not going to be seeing the target you're throwing to anyway based off the anticipation that they're asking you to throw with. And so even if you can't see it, as long as you're on time and the receiver's on time, I actually don't think that's going to be as big of an issue as we might think it would be.
And the Browns knew how tall Dillon Gabriel was when they drafted him. It's not like he showed up and they were like, oh my goodness, you're 5'11"? We thought you were 6'4". Like, they knew how tall he was. They were ready for this.
I just want to be a beacon of light in a dark, dark world for Browns fans right now. If you love Shadur Sanders and you think Shadur is going to be the next Tom Brady, well, if Dillon Gabriel beats him out for that first start, man, then you got somebody even better than the next Tom Brady. Like, come on. Like this is, I'm trying to be positive here, everybody. Like, I think you are very positive. Look, all right, let me be positive about Cam Ward. Cam Ward, you mentioned it a second ago, Frank, and maybe it's because I've spent so much time of my life in Nashville, but I don't remember a first overall selection in the NFL draft at the quarterback position that's ever been more forgotten than Cam Ward. And, like, in part, it's Shadur. In part, it's the Titans and the relevance that that franchise does or doesn't have with clicks. I don't know. But the world is not paying attention, Frank. And it stuns me. I still got to remind everybody, Cam Ward was clearly the best quarterback in this class. He was clearly the number one overall pick for the Titans for a reason.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be good. I've maintained this, that he just got lumped in with, oh, this quarterback class is bad. Well, yeah, it was a great quarterback class, but there is one really elite prospect in it. He would have fit in just fine in the top five of last year's draft with all those great quarterbacks who had great rookie years. And I like one thing that the jury wrote last summer that really shaped my opinion about Jaden Daniels was just how hard he was working, how he was in the building all the time, soaking everything up. It really led me to believe Jaden Daniels was going to have a big rookie year. And you hear the same things about Cam Ward all of a sudden. Like, Cam Ward talking about what are you going to do the rest of the summer? And he's just like, I'm just going to throw until my arm falls off and get in my playbook. And like that, I trust him on that because he's a guy who built himself up from nothing. He started at Incarnate Word. He had no FBS scholarship offers. His first college game was in front of like 3,000 fans. Like this is a guy who knows what it is to work his way up through to become the first overall pick of the draft. I think Cam Ward's in a good spot. And I thought about the Titans situation too. And we think about the Titans being a bad team, and they certainly are. But they've invested a lot of money and draft picks into the offensive line, which I don't think is going to be that bad. They have two pretty good running backs in Pollard and Spears. Calvin Ridley, he could do worse as a number one receiver. They have put enough around him that I think he can have success right away. If Brian Callahan's the quarterback whisperer, offensive guru that the Titans thought he was when they hired him. So I think Cam Ward hits the ground running. And he's, like you said, Fitz, he's a guy where nobody's talking about, but yet I think we're going to get into September, October and be like, wow, Cam Ward is the next star quarterback in the NFL. This guy's a really, really good player, and shame on us for not talking about him for months and months.
Yeah, I would say that Cam Ward loves that he's flying under the radar. As you'll know, I wrote a story on him going into the draft, and his family, his friends, even some quotes from Cam kind of reflected that. He's like, great, talk about Shador, talk about someone else. Like, I don't want this spotlight. I also think it will allow him to develop at a certain rate. I mean, I would even say Bryce Young got that to a degree, and I know it took him some time. Then he got benched, then he came back. But I would wonder if Bryce Young had gotten benched in the way he did last year in New York, in Pittsburgh, with the Cowboys, would the noise have been too much versus obviously it helped. I'm sorry that Andy Dalton got into a car accident. I'm not trying to make light of that, but he had to come back without an option because of the car accident that Andy Dalton got in and sprained his thumb. And so I think you kind of ask yourself, like, sometimes when you're in these smaller markets by NFL standards, it actually allows you to develop at a different rate, particularly when you don't have the spotlight of, like, Cleveland has become a big spotlight, whether or not it's a big city. I would say that when you look at what the Titans reporters were saying out of minicamp, they said that Cam Ward went 42 of 58 in 7 on 7 in team periods, which I was laughing because Minnesota Vikings coach Kevin O'Connell, actually had thanked his reporters for not doing a bunch of rep counting of J.J. McCarthy. And I know we'll get to J.J. McCarthy, so I hate to be the person who is parroting the rep counting, but we need some sort of numbers to work with here. And I think what was interesting is they kind of talked about how he had this stretch without interceptions. And then on the final day of minicamp, he did have two interceptions, also two touchdowns. But I think that, in my opinion, if you don't have interceptions in if you're a quarterback, you're not throwing an interception in OTAs, in training camp, it's actually not a good thing. I was at the Philadelphia Eagles last year when Jalen Hurts had his final day of like on-field teamwork, and he threw an interception. It was the first time he had been intercepted the whole camp. And to me, I'm like, good. You don't want to go into the season with this like streak from training camp where you've never had a chance to break down an interception with your coach, especially if you're in your first year with the team. You need time to break it down. You need to be trying things and getting a sense with your receiver of, hey, why did that go wrong? What did the defense see? So I actually think that's a good thing. And Cam Ward's kind of this guy who's like working quietly behind the scenes in some ways, but also been trash talking all of the defenders. And so I think it's this great balance of confidence, but also I'm not trying to make this about me.
There's a magic to the ability, I think, to fly under the radar in Nashville that will help Cam Ward. I genuinely believe that. And I don't say that as a slight to Nashville or to the Titans. In fact, it's just one of those cities. Like, you can walk. I've walked into coffee shops in that city and had, you know, Ben Folds at one table and Taylor Swift at another, and nobody's bothering either of them. And that, you know, you could talk about Derrick Henry at his peak and guys like Taylor Lewan that have been huge to the franchise. They can walk into any bar, anytime, anywhere, and they don't really get special treatment. They don't get special eyeballs. They don't get special focus. And I've often said that one of the challenges about playing in New York is that if you have a bad game and then you want to take your family out to get pizza afterwards, you are going to be reminded by the person that drops off your pizza that you sucked that day. Like, that's just part of playing in New York. That isn't part of playing in Nashville. So I think for the right personality that's really self-driven and understands exactly who they are, what they need to be, that doesn't necessarily need to be everywhere with every eyeball to feel like they're some sort of a rock star everywhere they go, I think Nashville can be a great place for a player to find their best potential within themselves. That's part of why I really like Cam Ward. My only question for Cam is just, do we have, Frank, you know I use this phrase too much, do we have enough proof of concept on Callahan as a head coach to be able to get something out of this offense? I don't know. We know that Callahan had tremendous success when his quarterback was named Joe Burrow. That's all we really know about Callahan right now. So it's when I have questions about Cam Ward, it isn't because of the city or the quarterback. It's because of the organizational structure that I don't necessarily trust. If I had to right now bank on who's going to fail who, I would bank on the Titans failing Cam Ward before Cam Ward fails the Titans. Mm. But I do think he is in a situation, in a city, in an atmosphere, in a climate that will allow him the opportunity to develop. And that may be exactly what he needs. He wouldn't get that in every market, but I think he gets that there.
Yeah, I definitely agree on Callahan. We might look back and it's the same thing with Caleb Williams and Matt Eberflus, where we're like, yep, should have dumped him last offseason when you had the chance because he just wasted a rookie year. Maybe Brian Callahan's awesome and Will Levis was a problem. Your guy, Will Levis, fits that. Yeah. But we're going to find out this year. We're going to find out if Brian Callahan's a good coach. Like, because if you can't get Cam Ward off the ground at all, then they got to move on and you probably wasted his rookie year. But we'll see. I think Cam Ward's going to be good right out of the gate. I think that he's just that type of dude. He's had a lot of experience in college. He's played at multiple colleges, which I do like now. It's a new thing, but I am coming around to that being a really, really good thing for a quarterback. And I think he's going to be just fine. And I think I don't think Titans are going to win a ton of games because their roster is not very good yet. But I think they're going to come out of this season and say, yep, we were right to draft Cam Ward. We were right to start him in week one and we got the right guy going forward.
And that's not the only guy's quarterback that is going to be starting week one that we're forgetting about. I mean, all indications right now are that Tyler Shuck he's in a great spot to be the starter for the New Orleans Saints. Like, we've just forgotten that Tyler Shuck is, like, thanks to the retirement of Derek Carr that most people didn't see coming, and whether or not the Saints knew, I don't know. We'll debate that all day. But I keep going back to when he was drafted, and Nate Tice made it clear the entire time we were doing our draft show, Tice made it clear that the Saints liked Shuck. Well, now he's going to start, Jory. So, like, I think it's interesting to me that the Saints have fallen so far off the radar for people that we're forgetting that they're going to be starting, you know, an 873-year-old rookie quarterback week one in all likelihood coming into this season.
Well, again, I would say that the same way, by all accounts, Cam Ward wants to be under the radar, and that's something I heard more from his friends and family telling me. I can assure you, after covering Kellen Moore as a player, a quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, and now he's a head coach, that Kellen Moore wants nothing more for us to not talk about him. I mean, let's just say, if I'm Kellen Moore if I'm Kellen Moore's agent, I'm being like, wait, no. Let's give the quarterback a little bit of time to develop. Let's wait, because if ownership thinks that you have a roster that should be winning now and a quarterback that you should be winning with now, then your clock starts in terms of how long you have to get it right. And I don't believe that the Saints roster as a whole is set up to be super competitive and win. I think that there are multiple pieces and that they do need to have a degree of rebuild. And so if you put a quarterback in right away. I think there are people in New Orleans, however, who would say, you know what? If this guy is the best quarterback on our roster right now and we can protect him, like there's not a huge injury risk, then we should put him in. I will say I like that they took Tyler Shuck in the second round rather than the first, which you could say, okay, they still put a premium pick on him. But getting Kelvin Banks Jr. as their left tackle, that is going to be huge for getting a quarterback there. You're getting a premium offensive lineman who will be able to protect him. It's also interesting because you have Kellen Moore, who ran an entire OTAs and minicamp session without having 11-on-11. They only did 7-on-7, according to ESPN reporter Kat Terrell. So I think that that's interesting when you think about, hey, let's really learn this offense in a progression and see what he can do. I would expect Tyler Shuck to be starting week one. I think that he will be given every opportunity to win that job. And I think that they want to learn and grow with him. And then I would say, if I'm Kellen Moore, what I want to do is what Cliff Kingsbury did with Jaden Daniels last year, another quarterback who obviously had a large volume of exposure at the college level. And what they did is they said, okay, let's start off with the simpler, more college level concepts. And that's not a knock on Jaden Daniels. It's just, why don't you gain confidence with these simpler concepts, or these concepts that are more familiar with you, I should say, at the pro level, and then we'll continue to add over the course of the season. And all of a sudden, what do you know? They're in the NFC Championship. So I think that that's what you should be doing with Tyler Shuck, is really saying, start with what you're good at, then add. And like, part of that is in the teaching progression, and part of that is when you get to week one and beyond.
You know how I feel about this. I hated the pick. I thought it was a waste. I think that the odds of Tyler Shuck being the guy at the end of the season where they're like, yes, you're a guy of the future, are so minimal. And a second round pick is valuable for a team like the Saints, who have an absolutely decaying roster with kind of one blue chip player under the age of 27. And that's Chris Olave, who has concussion issues. You could have used that pick for the next quarterback. And what's going to happen, and I will laugh incredibly much when it does happen, Tyler Shuck is going to be just good enough to get them to like five wins, and they're going to miss out on a top three pick, and they're going to miss out on a quarterback they want to draft. And goodness, if it's Arch Manning, they will never get over it in New Orleans. So there, this pick was just meaningless. It was just bad. You're drafting a guy who has played seven college seasons. He's already pretty old. Like I'm watching, you know, I pay attention to basketball too. I love basketball. When the NBA draft guys are like, well, that guy's 23, he's already maxed out. And you think about Tyler Shuck, that this is who he is. I don't think there's another level he's going to. He's kind of what he is. He needs to be starting week one because he needs to be an out-of-the-box starter. He's not a guy you develop for 2 years because he's going to be collecting his pension by then. Like, it's, I just didn't understand the pick. I don't understand what the Saints are doing. They have no self-awareness about what they are as a franchise. This is just another example. They wasted a second-round pick. They're going to be drafting their quarterback next April, and hopefully they're drafting in that top three or four and not like 10th, where they're just getting who's left over. So I didn't like the pick, but yes, Tyler Shuck is going to start week one. I think he's okay. I think he's going to be fine, but that's kind of the problem. He's going to be just good enough to get the Saints to, like, again, five or six wins. What does that accomplish? Like, the odds of Shuck being their dude going forward, prove me wrong. Let's say that. I just don't see it happening.
Also, for point of reference, for actual numbers, he will turn 26 on September 28th of this year. So a month into the season, 3 weeks into the season, he will be a 26-year-old rookie quarterback. That is part of why we make these comments. And the other part of it is, I mean, Jory mentioned Kellen Moore. I do want to point out Kellen Moore had tremendous success working in Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts. And, you know, he obviously had success with the Chargers working with Justin Herbert. And before that, he worked with Dak Prescott. Like, 26-year-old rookie quarterback with Kellen Moore. We have no idea. I cannot look at anybody squarely in the eyes and tell them, I know based on this, and this, I can't find the math that tells me that Kellen Moore is going to be the great quarterback whisperer to develop a rookie quarterback. How do we know?
I think he will be, but I think it's going to be in 2026. I think Kellen Moore is going to get his guy next year in the top however many picks of the draft, and then he's going to have his guy. Like, and that's perfectly fine. But that's why the Saints should have just been like, yeah, you know what, Spencer Rattler, take the season. We'll figure it out later.
And they still might, but they might get into rookie camp and decide that that's the way they're going to go too. All right, we got more quarterbacks to break down. We will do that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get some more rookies in and some guys that have played so little that we're calling them rookies. It's the offseason. We have license. Stick with us. We'll be right back. We are back better than ever. More quarterbacks to go through as we post camp, take a look at some of these situations. Before we get to guys that we are putting an asterisk next to, which asterisk, a wildly difficult word for me to ever say. But before we get to some of the guys that aren't rookies, but we're calling them rookies, let's get to one more rookie because Jackson Dart, I feel like at this point, I kind of want to throw up every time I read yet another glowing report of how much, of course they love Jackson. Like, the Giants love Jackson Dart. Breaking news. They traded back up into the first round to get their quarterback for a reason. But man, the hype machine is rolling. I'm already on record on this show saying I think Jackson Dart starts week one. But the hype machine, Frank, at this point, is it's pretty beefy for Jackson.
You talked about, you know, starting in a market where there's a little, you can't fly under the radar, and starting your career at the New York Football Giants is a good example of that. Because I mean, from preseason on, like, if Jackson Dart isn't their week one starter, there's just gonna be calls every single day for Jackson Dart to be starting, because we've seen Russell Wilson at this point in his career. We know what he is. We know what Jameis is too. And it's just going to be like, what's the point here? And I think the only thing really involved in Jackson Dart's timeline is what Brian Daboll thinks is best to save his job. Is it best for him to start the whole season? Is it best for him to start after their week 13? I think it's week 13 by week 14, maybe. What's best for him to kind of go to ownership at the end and say, yeah, we went 6-11, but look what Jackson Dart did in the last blank games. So I think that's a big part of this, and self-preservation mode for Brian Daboll, Joe Shane as well. I think Jackson Dart's going to be, I think he's their best quarterback right now. Like, I really do. We've just, again, Russ is just what he is at this point. His game did not age well. He was a great, great player. 9 Pro Bowls in 10 seasons.
Jory gave you a look.
Both of you looks in this segment. I've been trying not to interrupt because I feel like sometimes
come
I
switch
between. Please do, yes.
But like, okay, Fitz, when you're saying like all this hype around Jackson Dart, is that real? Because I live in New York and I've heard none of that. And Frank, do you really think that he is currently the best person to win games for them, or that he is long-term the best person to be able to be like an answer for them?
Right. Who do you want to start for the Giants right now?
No, no.
It's Jackson Dart, because what are you accomplishing with Russell
Wilson? No, you don't.
Yeah, you want Jackson to start. Russ sucks. Russ is washed. Russ is done. Washed, yeah. Russ is bad. Like, if the Pittsburgh Steelers were comfortable risking everything, not even knowing if they could get Aaron Rodgers, because even they knew, like, no, Russ ain't got nothing left. Like, there is not I would not want Russ to be my starting quarterback. Like, I think Russ is completely washed. He's done. He's over. And then the other side of this is, my God, just
ruin Jackson Dart by putting him out there right away?
How are you ruining him? Like, why are we presuming that you're ruining it?
Because most teams who put quarterbacks out right away ruin them.
I mean, the counter argument is going to be, did Dable ruin Josh Allen? Like, this is, at some point, if you're Brian Dable, and the reason you got your job was because you were able to develop the impossible, an inaccurate quarterback became accurate.
Right, but do we all still believe that Brian Dable was the variable there, or that Josh Allen was the variable there?
I mean,
when you look at what Brian Dable has done since Josh Allen and Josh Allen has done since Brian Dable, which way would you lean?
I would lean Josh Allen, but also Brian Dable did manage to get tremendous success for a year out of Daniel Jones. Like, I think the only way that Dable saves his job is if he shows quarterback development. And the only way he's going to be, they're not going to win enough games either way. So then the only way that he shows quarterback development is if his guy's out there long enough to get true development. So at some point, you're just going to have to survive through whatever this is with Jackson Dart for the first month of the season to get to the good on the other side. I don't see, in this situation, it doesn't help Dable save his job to have Russ cook, because Russ can't cook. Like, you know, at this point, everything Russ cooks is burnt and inedible. Like, so we're not letting Russ cook. So at that point, if you want to actually have any shot to win games, I think you have a better shot to win with Jackson Dart playing, and Jackson Dart gets through the lumps and develops. He has a better shot at having time on task to become a better quarterback throughout the course of the year, which then Dable can sell to ownership as, yeah, look at how he's playing week 16 versus week 1. That's a reason you shouldn't change the regime.
No, I completely disagree. I think that if you want to win week 1, your best chance is a quarterback who understands what they're doing. Now, Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston might not be the best long-term answers, but I think both of them give you a better chance week 1 through probably week 5, if not 10, to win with this Giants team. They just need to not mess it up, which maybe for Jameis, that's actually kind of challenging. But when you think about what Russ did when the Steelers defense was playing well last year, the Giants defense should be better than their offense this year. I think we can all agree on that, particularly when you look at how they've loaded up at the defensive line, and particularly if Abdul Carter can get healthy enough to play early in the year, or if at least by the middle of the year. So to me, both of those guys give you a better chance to win early on. And then the question is, if Jackson Dart looks good later in the season, then you can say, oh, look, we know how to win games. We know how to get the defense going. And by the way, we have a quarterback who's not quite there yet, but he's making the progress. But if you start early, you lose, you have Jackson Dart not playing well, then you pretty much have all your cards on the table. And I don't even think you make it through the season. And by the way, Hard Knocks is coming back to the NFC East, which means that the Giants, despite having quite a few issues last year from Hard Knocks, completely broadcasting and just telling the entire world how John Mara did not want to let go of Saquon Barkley. So you can't really, I mean, I would think that they'd have more editing control over this year, but I think that you're not going to be able to fly under the radar, especially in New York, and especially with Hard Knocks coming to the NFC East.
I think New York at this point, other than the Ben McAdoo year, the Giants don't fire in season. And I think the Giants as an organization have to understand that when you start with the Commanders, the Cowboys, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Saints, the Eagles, the Broncos, the Eagles, you are likely going to start 1-7. Like, and I don't care which guy in your quarterback room is the quarterback, you're going to start 1-7. You're going to be one of the worst teams in the league. But if you can go to ownership and say, hey, we're going to survive this, we're going to get through this, and in that process, we're going to get to a spot where our quarterback gets better and better. We're going to manage what he's asked to do. We're going to take lumps. Like, they might lose, as you said earlier, Drake May lost that first game, and the final score looked far worse than Drake May did. I think you're just going to have to accept the fact that if you're going 1-7, either way. Russ does not equal a single extra win over Jackson Dart in my mind. So if I'm going 1-7 either way, Russ, I don't think Russ is any good.
Why do you have all this? Where is this confidence in Jackson Dart coming from?
No, this is not about confidence in Jackson Dart. This is consistent to what I said to Frank a year ago about Russell Wilson. I think Russell Wilson is not, like, right now, I would rather start Jameis Winston than Russell Wilson. I don't think Russell Wilson has anything left in his tank. Like, as a Raiders fan,
you
if you told me.
Thought that last I year, and he did have something left in his tank.
Like, for 3 weeks, people thought, oh, man, this is it. And then all of a sudden, they're like, wait, this isn't it. This isn't it.
His passer rating was 95.6. Let's not suggest that he was, like, just completely a problem. He wasn't super lighting it up, but 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions in 11 games, 63.7% completion rate. I mean, at the end of the year, everyone in Pittsburgh got off track, and I'm not saying that Russell Wilson had the best year of his life, but I'm saying that when you think about just being able to manage, particularly if you have a guy like Malik Nabers out there and you have Tyrann Tracy looked good last year, you've got a defense that should be a little more consistent, you'd hope, than what Pittsburgh was at the end of last season. I don't think Russell Wilson is the liability that you're making him out to be.
I mean, okay, so my counter to that is going to be, again, the worst quarterbacking I can remember in a very long time was Aiden O'Connell. I watched that last year. Like, I watched the limitations of Aiden O'Connell. I'll say it that way to be really, really kind in Aiden O'Connell's process. His career passer rating is 85. Okay. In the last 15 games of Aiden O'Connell's career, he had a passer rating of 19 with 2,884 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions. Is anyone going to look at Aiden O'Connell and say Aiden should start this year? No, because no matter what the numbers say, you watch and you're like, yeah, Russ is cooked. There's just nothing. There's nothing there to me.
Frank is the Denver resident. I just
enjoying watching you guys fight. I agree. I don't
look at think, look, like, Jory I and I bring points. In I Testy do, Tuesday. Let's go.
I do
Come
see
on.
both sides of this of, you know, throw Russ to the wolves because you're going 1-7 anyway, and you don't want to saddle Jackson Dart with that. I also understand it's like, what's the point in starting 1-7 with Russell Wilson? You're not making any progress as a franchise. But it just depends whether you think Jackson Dart can be a functional quarterback week one. I think we do overrate the whole, like, the quarterbacks need to sit. If you think about some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, they didn't sit. Justin Herbert didn't sit. Joe Burrow didn't sit. Dak Prescott didn't sit. Like, a lot of these guys, a lot of the rookies last year, Bo Nix and Jaden Daniels, these guys started week one on and were pretty good, and you learn from playing. I do believe that. But Jackson Dart comes from a weird, tricked-up offense at Ole Miss, so maybe he's not ready to start in the NFL. I think that's something internal. I think the Giants would have to know he's ready to start or he's not ready to start, and that kind of bases their decision more than whether you'd ruin him or not week one. If he could start week one, I do think that just as an organization, I'd much rather see Jackson Dart take his lumps than just watch Russell Wilson go through the motions. Because I agree with Fitz. They're going probably 1-7 or 2-6 either way. Like, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is.
And then what happens if they do that? Brian Daboll's gone, Joe Shane's gone, and Jackson Dart has to learn a new offense last year and also has a losing record and has been hit a bunch of times.
Well, that's probably why they should have just fired Brian Daboll. Like, they had to.
But they didn't. But they didn't. So now let's think about the fact that they didn't do that. Right? What's their best option for the quarterback?
But that's why I think Jackson Dart playing is the best option, Jory, because what's going to happen when he sits, they start 1-7 with Russ. The locker room realizes that they're losing everything. They've got nothing left, and they got to get Jackson Dart in. Then they get Jackson Dart in, and instead of getting 17 games of Jackson Dart, they get 8. They get 9. They get 9 games to work out. Like, what is? And let's go back to the way we talked about Jaden Daniels at the beginning of last season, where we talked about how safe that offense was. Calculated, right? But intentional, but it was safe. They needed to give Jaden Daniels time to just let him week by week unfold more. They have a better chance of doing that, even if it means they take lumps early in the season. They have a better chance of doing that because you get 17 weeks of Jackson Dart to become the best version of himself. I think the worst case scenario is that you start Russ for half the season and then you finally put Jackson in and the first 3 or 4 games he's figuring it out. And then you basically have 4 good games at the end of the year. And now you're like, okay, was a month of Jackson Dart reason to keep Brian Daboll or not reason to keep Brian Daboll? Like, that to me is worst case scenario. If you lose those 8 games in the beginning of the year, but the back half of the season, when it's an easier schedule, you see the best of Jackson because he worked all of those warts out while they were getting their asses kicked. now all of a sudden you've got a real chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think when you look at it and you see the Sam Darnolds, the Zach Wilsons, there's just so many guys in the history of the NFL who have started right away, not figured it out. I mean, I think that the Panthers are lucky in some ways that they were able to get Bryce Young back to what he was. Because I do think that when you benched him at the beginning of the second year, as opposed to just waiting to start him his first year, it was not a good look. So I think that you should trend toward development, but it's just a different philosophical approach than what you guys are taking.
So let's get to JJ. This is where we get the asterisks. JJ McCarthy, not really a rookie, but is a rookie in the sense that he played no meaningful football last year. He secures QB1. Jory, how are we feeling about JJ McCarthy now that we've gotten this far into the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best things JJ McCarthy has going for him is, remember who he's going out to play with? The Justin Jeffersons of the world, the Jordan Addisons, an offensive line that has really been bolstered. And oh, by the way, he has easily a top five play caller, and you can argue who's a better play caller quarterback developer than Kevin O'Connell. I don't think that there's anyone definitively better at identifying talent, developing talent, and calling plays for said talent. I think you could say, oh, Kyle Shanahan, great play caller, but he wanted Trey Lance. He lucked into Brock Purdy. So, I mean, you know that I've gone off on that tangent quite a bit on this show. But I think that when you look at JJ McCarthy, you could first of all say, the biggest threat to JJ McCarthy starting week one was if the Vikings ended up falling for Aaron Rodgers, and they didn't. And so that is a big deal for them. That now that Aaron Rodgers is with the Steelers, JJ McCarthy doesn't need to be looking behind his back. I don't really think that Kevin O'Connell created an environment where he had to anyway, but I do think that that is something that clearly Aaron Rodgers was trying to make happen because he understood the strength of the roster in Minnesota and the strength of the play caller. Kevin O'Connell, when he was talking, just talked a lot about during OTAs, hey, it's the 10,000-hour rule. 10,000 hours, you start to become an expert in something. And again, we've talked about this with the other quarterbacks around the league and how much do they have that mental bait to draw upon when they're looking at defenses. I will say, if you're a quarterback and you're trying to be exposed to some pretty wild defenses right away, even in the spring, going against Brian Flores' defense is definitely going to get you exposed to different things. Even Kevin O'Connell, there were some things during OTAs and he's like, what in the world is flowing? Doing. And that's what you want. I mean, I wrote a story last year about Sean McVay intentionally calling unscripted practices against guys with the Rams because he wanted to make sure that he as a play caller and his players in the heat of the game were ready to respond. And so I think that it is going to take some time. I do think we have questions. I know when we were talking about the NFC North not long ago and I was talking about the benefit of stability that the Green Bay Packers had, I still have questions about how long it will take JJ McCarthy to catch up. But I also, and also, if you believe that your best way to win with JJ McCarthy as quarterback is to lean heavily on the run game, well, are you really taking advantage of your best offensive asset, which is clearly Justin Jefferson? I don't know. But I do think that, as we've been talking about, I like the way the Vikings are going about their process, even though I'm not yet sure what results it will lead to.
I'm very bullish on JJ McCarthy and the Vikings. I think that it's weird how we talk about this, how we just, the market especially thinks that the Vikings are just going to fall off and be under 500. Why? Because Sam Darnold, is that good? Or is it the environment? Well, you talked about it, Jory. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson. They have a good running game with Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones had a heck of a season last year. And I like their process of, okay, we're going to let Sam Darnold go because we trust J.J. McCarthy. I never bought any of the Aaron Rodgers stuff. I think they talked to him fine. He's Aaron Rodgers. Kevin O'Connell wanted to bring him in and see what's up. And I don't think they were ever serious because all of their offseason moves were with a very specific plan in mind of, we drafted this guy 10th overall. We traded up to draft him 10th overall. We are going to trust him and build around him on his rookie deal. We're going to bolster the interior offensive line, which they did a great job with, I thought. We are going to bring back Aaron Jones, who had that great season. We're going to make the environment around JJ even better so he can succeed. Like you said, great play caller, great team around him. This team went 14-3 last year. I don't, and unless you believe Sam Darnold is just that dude now, which maybe he is, maybe we'll see in Seattle, but I think it's the environment. And I think that JJ McCarthy steps in. I think he has a great season. I don't think they try to hide him in any way because even though he didn't get the practice all last year on injured reserve and stuff, he's around. He's soaking up the information. He's, as long as he's healthy, that's the only thing. Can he stay healthy? He's got to prove that now. But I think he's played enough high-level football at Michigan, and the Vikings obviously trusted him. They you have to love a guy to trade up and draft somebody 10th overall. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to have a great year, and I think the Vikings are going to have a great year. I see no reason to think there's that big of a downgrade from Sam Darnold to J.J. McCarthy. Why would I? J.J. McCarthy was very highly thought of by the Vikings when they did that in the draft last year. I think he pays off. I think that they're really going to be happy with what they decided to do, letting Sam Darnold go and just going forward with J.J. McCarthy.
So, Frank, I want to ask you, when you say you think that the Vikings are going to have another great year, how would you define a great year for them? Because I think that even Justin Jefferson was talking during OTAs and saying, look, since Justin Jefferson got there, since Kevin O'Connell got there, they've been really strong in the regular season, but they have not had the playoff success and obviously didn't win a playoff game last year. So when you say great season, what are you expecting from them, not only in their record, but also in terms of any playoff advancement?
And that's the thing. I mean, playoffs is such a... It's a one and like to pull back the curtain. I'm doing this top 25 teams of the quarter century for a couple weeks from now. Almost half of the teams on that list didn't win a Super Bowl. There are 10 teams, not to go down a rabbit hole here, but of the last 25 seasons, there are 10 teams that had a point differential of 200 or more. You know how many of those teams won a Super Bowl? Zero. It's just a one and done playoff format. Sometimes leads to wonky results. I try not to put too much emphasis in, well, the Vikings didn't win a playoff game, so that wasn't a successful season. Or the Giants 3 years ago won a playoff game, so they're great and they're on the
Frank,
rise.
Frank, you do not take that approach to the Cowboys.
No, I do. I try to. Like, I do. I try to take that. I don't overreact.
And
the Cowboys
went 12-5 three straight years, and they had some playoff success in winning the wild card round, but not the divisional round. Did you feel like it was a good season the way that you feel like the Vikings no playoff wins has been a good season?
It's just, it depends, because getting boat raced by the Packers at home, no, that's a bad way to end it. Losing at the 49ers the year before that, it's like, all right, well, the 49ers are the better team. Like, you just run up against good teams sometimes. So I don't want to sit here and say the Vikings don't win a playoff game, it's not a successful season, because who knows? They play in a very... Okay. What did they play the Eagles in the first round?
Right, and they go up against Philly. The Eagles, like, yeah.
So I think just making it back to the playoffs of the toughest division in the NFL would be a really good season for the Vikings, because nobody expects anything of them right now. They're under win totals, 8.5. People think they're going to be a 500 team. Like, I think that for them to make it back to the playoffs and get to the end of the season and be like, we just won 11 games with J.J. McCarthy. He's still got another couple of years before he really starts to cost us any money. We could keep building this thing. I don't think it's out of the question the Vikings can win that division. Like, why not? Like, they were 14-2 going into the finale last year.
I have no idea what's going to happen with that division.
Yeah, that division's going to be wild. Speaking of that division, it should be noted, the Vikings open with the Bears. They do not play another divisional opponent until they play the Lions in week 8. So you talk about like some of the scheduled things that are there for them. They've got the Falcons, the Bengals, the Steelers, the Browns in consecutive weeks. Like, there's an opportunity for JJ to get his feet under him before they even get to those division.
And I guess only thing is, why do we think JJ McCarthy won't be good? Like, why? Like he's stuck in such a great environment. He was a highly drafted guy in a draft class we've seen have success. Like, I don't, for anybody hating on JJ McCarthy, being like, I don't know about JJ McCarthy. Why? Like, why would we not think he can succeed where Sam Darnold did? I guess that's my only point. I think McCarthy's going to be really, really good. And by the end of the year, we're going to be like, wow, we're going to be thinking about JJ McCarthy at this time next year, like we're thinking about Bo Nix right now.
Yeah, we got to move on. Like, I don't know.
Why not?
We haven't seen any of it. Like, they're even telling me, go back to Michigan. Like, was he the reason Michigan won a lot of football games? He was good. He was good at Michigan.
He's very efficient. Jim Harbaugh didn't want to play that way. And you know Jim Harbaugh. Like, you watch college game more than me. But Jim Harbaugh wants to run the ball. He wants to never pass. If Jim Harbaugh never passed the ball, I think he'd be a happy man. Like, if he could win every game, but going back to 1923 football, he'd be a happy man. So I don't think
that's the indictment of JJ. I don't disagree with
that. When JJ had to make plays, he did.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I can't change my opinion of the minute he was drafted. The minute he was drafted, I was like, who the hell knows? Like, we haven't seen him do any of what he would be asked to do. Like, we just haven't seen enough to know. So I'm still in the very unknown process with him. All right, we got to get to the rise, repeat, retreat time. It is time for that. We'll take a quick break. And then we actually got another good division. 2 weeks in a row, we get the NFC West rise, repeat, retreat coming at you next. It's time for Rise, Repeat, Retreat, you know the drill. One division per week, 32 teams. Better, worse, or same from a year ago right now. How do we feel about them? If you've missed any of the divisions, go out there on YouTube. Check them out. It's out there. A lot of fun. A lot of good takes last week, particularly because I'm biased and it was AFC West. This week, it's the NFC West. So the question is, how do we feel about this team today versus how we felt about them a year ago? Let's start with the 49ers, Jory. How do you feel about San Francisco today versus how you felt about San Francisco last June?
I think you have to feel worse about them than last June after seeing what happened. But the biggest question to me is, how healthy are they going to be? Because the down season they had in 2024 was first and foremost hinging on the extensive number of injuries they had. I mean, I think they were on their 17th string running back by the end of the season. I think from a Brock Purdy standpoint, you should feel good that, hey, this is a team that has another year of showing Brock Purdy can be what you want him to be. I think that he's not a one-hit wonder, and I'm not saying he's got the arm talent of Aaron Rodgers necessarily, or Aaron Rodgers at his prime when he was winning four MVPs, but I do think that Brock Purdy is a very strong player. He makes more plays with his legs than people probably give him credit for, and I think he's someone who can operate Kyle Shanahan's offense at a high level and really help feature the playmakers. So my question would be, well, is Christian McCaffrey healthy? I don't feel like devastated about the loss of Deebo Samuel. I think it hurts, but I think you do have other playmakers. I think the question to me is more guys like Ricky Pearsall and some of those younger guys. I mean, even when you look at running back and some of the young running backs we saw last year, like how many of those guys will they be able to prominently feature? And also, obviously, Nick Bosa's health is always something that's dependent on. So I would say, going back to the rise, repeat, or retreat, I would say retreat from where I thought before going into 2024 season, but not necessarily retreat where I thought coming out of the 2024 season or how they did in 2024.
You know, I'm going to go with repeat because I look at the 49ers, and I've done a 180 on them over the offseason. I think a lot of regression factors are in their favor, including the injuries, as you talked about, Jory. They were so beat up last year. And all of a sudden, you come back into this year, and everybody's given up on them. I think that, you know, everybody thinks the Rams are now, they're going to win the NFC West. The betting market hasn't changed. The betting market still thinks the 49ers are one of the best teams in football. And I looked into that. I was like, why would they? 49ers win totals 10.5. I think only two teams have a higher win total. And I was like, why is that? When I'm really looking into these previews and thinking about the 49ers, you look at the injuries and you look at the guys who are going to get back. And yes, they didn't have a great offseason, but the bones are still there of that team that made a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Christian McCaffrey has been hurt before in his career and bounced right back. Yes, he's a little older, but Christian McCaffrey's such a difference maker that I'm not going to sit here and predict that he's going to get injured again, because I think he had a bad year last year, just a fluky, unlucky year with injuries, as most of the 49ers did. And yes, they lose Deebo Samuel, but I think Ricky Pearsall has finished last season really strong. I think Juwan Jennings showed I could be a difference maker receiver. They still have talent, and I still have a ton of trust in Kyle Shanahan. I think he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. Yes, their defense took some hits, but I thought they added a lot in the draft to the defense. That's going to help them get younger. I think adding Robert Saleh to run the defense is a fantastic move. Say what you will about Robert Saleh. He was coaching in a clown show environment in the Jets, still managed to produce great defenses out there. So I think he's going to have a positive impact on the 49ers defense. Everything about the 49ers just leads me to believe they're going to rebound to what we thought they were going to be. I think last year was a really, really unlucky season, and they're going to be back to being contenders this year.
I do think this is just an interesting nugget. No matter how it goes down, Kyle Shanahan has had four winning seasons as a head coach and four losing seasons as a head coach. And when they are good, they average about 12-5 as their record in those four good years. In those four bad records, they average a record of about 5-12. So they go from 12-5 to 5-12. Like, this is a weird, they've had four great years, four really bad years under Kyle Shanahan. I don't know, y'all. Like, the amount of injuries stacked up, like, I think it's easy to retreat on the 49ers at this point, because it's too much. We saw too much last year, and it's too much to get out of my brain. I just wonder what all of that does. Now they've paid Brock Purdy. I mean, we've sort of anointed Kyle Shanahan as somebody that always figures it out. He's about 50-50 right now, and that this year will change a lot of that perspective. That's all one way or the other. I'm going to retreat on the 49ers for sake of having to do something on this. Over-under on this, like Frank said, is 10.5. What about the Cardinals? 8-9 last year, over under 8.5. The Cardinals mired in the sea of mediocrity usually. Where are you, Jory, today on the Cardinals versus a year ago right now on the Cardinals?
I feel like I just don't think about the Cardinals much. Maybe that's like an obnoxious National Reporter thing to say. But I would say I think that retreat, because I feel like a couple years ago we did feel like, hey, they've got – or not a couple years. Like a couple years ago they had – they were only winning four games, but it's kind of like, oh, but you kind of could see what the plan was that they were doing. Then they get Marvin Harrison Jr. last year, and you're like, well, now Kyler might have the guy. And they still had a losing record. And so I just have a lot of questions about can they put all the pieces together, because I felt like they had the pieces last year that they should be able to take that big jump, and they didn't. And I don't think that their division's going to make it any easier now that the Rams are actually quite strong. And we'll get to them.
I'm just kind of – I guess repeat on the Cardinals. They're one of those teams that it's just, they're just kind of stuck in the middle. Like, I don't see there being a higher ceiling for them. Now, I will say this, Jonathan Gannon, I think, is a really, really good defensive coach, and he hasn't had much talent. So what do they do this offseason? They pounded the draft and even free agency defense. I think this defense is going to be a lot better than it has been the last couple of years. But my question is Kyler Murray. What's his ceiling, really? What's his team ceiling with him? It's not like Kyler Murray hasn't played a lot of games already. He's played a lot and just kind of been one of those quarterbacks who's okay. He's fine, but he didn't get the most out of Marvin Harrison last year. He didn't really elevate this offense like I thought he would. I thought Kyler Murray coming back from the ACL, he played really well late two seasons ago, 2023 season. I thought, okay, 2024, he's going to have a really big season. Again, Marvin Harrison's there. And it just didn't happen. And now you get to a point in Kyler Murray's career where you just wonder, is this it? This is as far as we're going to go with Kyler Murray. I think the Cardinals are going to be slightly better. Like, they did improve a lot last year, especially in the win-loss column. But kind of to Jory's point, it's one of those improvements where you're like, do I really think the next step is going to be 10 wins, 12 wins? I don't. I think they're going to be just kind of slightly better. We're going to get to the end of the year and kind of just say, this is what the Cardinals are. They're going to be hovering around 500. They're going to be okay. But really, I just don't see there being another big step for them with this core.
Yeah, I'm repeat on the Cardinals for all those reasons. It just feels like run it back for the kind of the same of what they were last year. What about the Seahawks? Big changes for Seattle at the quarterback position. 10-7 last year. Over under on this is 8.5. Frank, are you rise, repeat, or retreat on Seattle?
I think a little bit of retreat, just because I was pretty high on the Seahawks last year. And they weren't bad, like, by any means. They won a lot of games. They were in the playoff race, but they also had some confounding losses that were bothersome. And now You trade, like, Geno Smith is not a bad quarterback. You trade him away. You trade DK Metcalf away, which does not help your offense. If you think that Seahawks are going to be a playoff team and take the next step, it's because you trust Mike McDonald to kind of be better in his second year with his complicated scheme and teaching it and implementing it. And I can see that path, but at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if Sam Darnold's really a big upgrade on Geno Smith. I know that whoever they're going to get to replace DK Metcalf in that offense is not an upgrade. And where do the Seahawks go from here? I just think they're a team like the Cardinals to me, where they're just kind of are who they are. They're good. They're not bad in any way. But do I see them having the ceiling of the Rams or the 49ers? I just don't. I think they're good. They're solid. I do like Mike McDonald as a coach still, but I don't think there's some 12-win season coming. I think they're just going to be kind of in the playoff race, probably not make the playoffs, and that's who they're going to be the next few years. It's just, I don't see there being much more here for them.
I would say I'm rise, not from where they ended the season again, but from where they were going into the season, because I think there were a lot of question marks in terms of what were the coaching staff going to do. They had Ryan Grubb coming from the college game, and they were hoping that would work offensively. Now they have Clint Kubiak, who does have a little bit more of an NFL background. He also has a similar offensive background to what Sam Darnold had, including an overlapping year in San Francisco. And so I think that even if the pieces aren't necessarily stronger in terms of what the roster looks like, which I don't feel better about the roster, I do feel better about the cohesiveness of the coaching staff being able to maximize the roster than I felt like they would be able to do in the first year.
Yeah, I'm also going to rise because second year under Mike McDonald, as their head coach, as my Doobie Brothers impression, will make that defense even better. So I'm rise on the Seahawks, but from where I was a year ago, but I think they're about the same team. 10-7 feels about right. Now, what about the Rams? Everybody last year was leaving the Rams for dead. Vegas might still be over under 9.5 for the win total for the Rams. They went 10-7 last year. Jory, where are you? Rise, repeat, retreat.
Yeah, I'm definitely rise. And I think that you have to be after, hey, they start off the season. What 1-4, and then they go on to not only make it to the playoffs, but win playoff games. They looked good in the playoffs. I mean, I definitely think you have to be impressed or win a playoff game, and they came quite close against the Eagles in the snow. So I think this is a team that does have more left in the tank with Matthew Stafford. I understand that they got rid of Cooper Kupp, or they let him go to the Seahawks, but I also think that was in part because of what they found in Puka Nacua in the fifth round, and so I don't feel strongly concerned about that. I think a year ago you had to ask, oh, Braden Fisk, Jared Verse, do you feel like those are the guys that are going to actually be able to do it, and how long will it take them? Because sometimes there are people around the league who feel like it'll take 3 years for a defensive lineman to get caught up, and instead they just burst onto the scene. And so I think that we've just seen this team in LA that consistently offensively and defensively, they're hitting on their draft picks, and they're not waiting 3 to 5 years for their draft picks to be able to produce. Right away, they're contributing. So I think that both the veterans and the young guys have strengths. They're being developed, and they're being put into positions to succeed. So definite rise for me on the Rams.
Yeah, rise for me too. And I feel kind of dumb because I doubted Sean McVay. I mean, yes, they started slow, but what is coaching in the NFL? It's getting your team to play better and better and better over the course of the year. And you saw this team improve leaps and bounds. By the end of the year, that defense, which was a big-time question mark. Remember, the Cardinals torched him early in the season. We're like, oh, my goodness, the Rams are going to be bad. Let's talk about trading Cooper Kupp, trading Matthew Stafford even before the deadline and all that. But by the end of the year, they were the type of team that could go in and compete in Philadelphia in a playoff game. A lot of that was just the development of that defense. Jared Verse is a dude. Like Jared Verse wins Defensive Player of the Year this year. It wouldn't blow me away. He's that good. He was so good as a rookie. They nailed that draft pick. They nailed other draft picks. You know that they're going to be aggressive even in season. When if they see an opening, they're going to go make a deal. Like they're that team. They're constantly have their foot on the gas. They have one of the best coaches in the NFL. I do worry about Matthew Stafford's age a little bit. He's getting to that point where, all right, injuries are a factor, and just the age cliff is a factor. Most quarterbacks aren't that good this old in their career, but Matthew Stafford has been good almost his entire career, very consistent. And yes, they lost Cooper Kupp, but I think Davante Adams is an upgrade. Cooper Kupp had a great career. 2021 was one of the best seasons of any player in NFL history, any position. But I think that right now, Davante Adams is a huge upgrade for them. Adams and Puka Nacua on the outside with Matthew Stafford throwing to them as long as he can stay healthy. The defense getting better and better. Yeah, I really like this Rams team and what they're doing. And a big part of that is Sean McVay. It's going to be a while before I doubt him again. It was dumb to do it last year. I'm not doing it again. Sean McVay is one of those dudes who just puts a team on his shoulders and makes them better than they are. Sean McVay's awesome. And I think they're going to be a really, really good team. And the 49ers versus Rams games are going to be awesome this year.
Yeah, I was wrong about the Rams last year. I thought they would take a step back. I was really, really wrong. So I have to be Rise. I'm wildly Rise. But Devontae in Sean McVay's offense, I can't wait for. I think the Rams are clearly a Super Bowl caliber team in the NFC this year. So it, presuming healthy, they could stay healthy. They obviously think that too, as they continue to run it back with an old quarterback, but it should be good enough for them this year. A big rise on them. All right. A big rise on you guys for listening to this much of the show. We've been a little long, but you know, the off season, we still get fired up. It's a testy Tuesday, and you never know what's going to happen. Follow all of us on social media. Be sure you're sticking with Yahoo throughout the course of the off season. We're with you every single Tuesday. Rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, your family, tell your enemies, tell everybody to hang out with us every single week. We appreciate you guys listening. Have a great weekend.